be hope. The passage from St. Paul's letter to the Romans should be a tremendous source of encouragement and guidance as we face challenges and struggles in our daily lives. I want you to bear in mind that this is a letter that was written by a man who had already been persecuted for his faith. He knew what suffering was, and he was writing it to a church that was under constant threat, so much so that they had to meet in secret. It's likely that those are the sufferings, or at least some of the sufferings, that Paul's speaking of. Can you imagine living in a time and place where we had to meet in secret? And even as I say this to you right now, and I can't imagine it for myself or this church or any other church in the United States, we know there are places in this world where Christians do have to meet in secret. We all have our own sufferings here in the corner of the world, don't we? I want you to take a moment. We're going to pause, and I want you to think about the most difficult thing you have ever experienced. I'm not trying to make you sad. I promise we're going to go to a better place from here, but I want you to think about it. It's fair to say that you survived it, whatever it was. That's an accurate statement because we're all sitting here now. So we're at least in that point where we're persevering. We've done some suffering, but we're persevering. There's something I want you to know about the most difficult thing that you've ever experienced. You are not alone. You might think that you're all alone. You may think that no one else could possibly understand what you've had to deal with, or they just wouldn't understand it even if you tried, but you must know this. You are not the only one. Whatever it is you're going through, there is someone else who is also experiencing it or who has already experienced it and come through. So what is it that you've suffered? Is it the person you love dearly and you lost through death, estrangement, or some other life circumstance? A job you lost? That illness that you or a loved one is suffering through? Family relationships that aren't what they could be and should be? Addictions you struggle with? Overwhelming debt? A marriage on the rocks? A past you can't seem to overcome? Worries about your future? Feelings of inadequacy, shame, you just can't seem to shake? Do you think that you are not worthy of grace and love and mercy and hope? Let me give you some biblical examples of some far-out sufferings, horrific sufferings. The very first family ever suffered a tragic loss when one of their sons was murdered. And as that wasn't bad enough, they had to deal with the fact that their other son was the murderer. And what about Josheba? And if you don't recognize that name, you may recognize the name of her son, Moses. Parents, can you imagine putting your child in a basket and sending them down the river? What about Joseph? His own brothers sold him into slavery. My point is, from the very beginning of man, humans have been suffering in all sorts of ways, and we modern people may live and dress a lot differently than people from 2,000 plus years ago, but the fact is, our problems are pretty much the same. Death, broken families, greed, envy, so on, so on, so on. Come back to us now. So here we are. We've all suffered, and we're at least persevering. I want to pause for a moment and say, suffer, perseverance, build character, and hope don't necessarily have to happen in a progressive order. It's possible they could all be happening at the same time. So if you feel that way, it's probably true. But here now, we all know we are at least persevering through our sufferings because we're here. Okay. And Paul lays it out for us. Perseverance produces character. Character produces hope. What does that mean anyway? Perseverance produces character. Well, it probably looks a lot different depending on who you are and what you've suffered. In general terms, though, most people who've survived sufferings like the ones we mentioned, like the ones you're thinking about, okay, discover how strong they truly are. And I don't know about you, but I know that the source of my true strength comes from God, my faith in Jesus, and the Holy Spirit. Perhaps part of this character building is now you have to, people, you've suffered some loss. Now you have to perform some tasks you didn't have to do before. Now all of a sudden, you did it, and you did it. Well, at least you got it done, and maybe you did it well, and you feel a sense of accomplishments. That is building character. Or maybe you come to realize how precious life is and how important it is to make the most of it. And that character, my friends, produces hope. And hope is where I really want us to focus our attention today. What is hope? The modern-day definition of hope is a feeling of expectation and desire for a certain thing to happen. The archaic definition, which I think would be more in line with scriptural context, is a feeling of trust. I want you to go back in your mind to the difficult thing I asked you to dwell on earlier. In your suffering, whatever it was, it caused your heart to ache, didn't it? Here's something worth considering. When you're enduring the trials and tribulations and sufferings of this world, you really only have two responses. It's heartache or hope. We all know what heartache brings, depression, despair, and the like. But let me share this completely empowering truth with you. You can choose hope. And choosing hope over heartache can and should be a conscious decision and is something that you and I have complete control over. God gave us free will, and it's in times of suffering that we must use it decisively. Don't get me wrong, this doesn't mean that your heart is not going to ache and just go away, but to put it plainly, our heartaches and our sufferings require spiritual management. And choosing to live in hope is how we must do this. I don't know if you know this or not, but your heart can be deceived, and especially when you're grieving and hurting and suffering and the devil is worming his way in. And I want you to be very careful not to subscribe to that popular philosophy to follow your heart. Because if you're vulnerable and you're suffering, I'm here to tell you that your heart can be deceived and your heart can lead you the wrong way. It's imperative that you spiritually manage your suffering and your grieving, because when you're vulnerable and the devil has wormed his way in, he'll whisper things to you. He'll say, buy that thing you can't afford just to make you feel better. Take another drink just to knock the edge off. You don't have to go to Bible study today. You know those people don't like you anyway. Friends, forget those toxic whisperings of your heartache and your suffering. They are not from God. They are not from the Holy Spirit. They are indeed from the devil. There are times, those are the times, when you have to consciously choose hope to lead your heart to the peace and the comfort you desperately need. And that hope leads us to the only place that any of us are going to find the peace and comfort we need, and that is through faith and relationship with God the Father, Jesus the Son, and the Holy Spirit. One of my favorite stories in the Bible about hope is a parable, and nowhere in that parable does it mention the word hope. And those of you who know me and know my particular brand of suffering and heartache will understand why this is my favorite. It is the story of the persistent widow, and it goes like this. She was a widow. You know that's some suffering. She had an injustice done to her, and then she went to the judge for justice, and she was not granted justice. And the reason that Jesus tells this story is because he wants us to remember to do two important things: to always pray and never give up. Well, this widow, the parable of the persistent widow, she didn't give up. And she went back over and over and asking for justice. And finally, the judge granted her justice. And I submit to you that the fuel that kept her going, that made her get up and make the walk along that dusty road time and time again looking for justice, was hope and faith in God that he would allow her to prevail. In addition to choosing hope and fueling your life with hope, I humbly submit to you that we are called to be hope to those who are suffering around us. Have you ever heard that? I didn't make this up, so I'm not that smart, but have you ever heard this phrase, make your misery your ministry? Has anybody ever heard that? Okay. I didn't come up with that. A friend of mine told me about a sermon she heard that her pastor gave, and we were talking about some things going on with me, and she's like, that's what you're doing. I was like, I wasn't there. I didn't hear the service. So I suggest you make your misery your ministry. He's not here today, but I don't think he'd mind if I said this. Ricky Temple is somebody who has chosen to make his misery his ministry. I know I'm someone who's chosen to make my misery my ministry. It's a couple at the church where I work, Tim and Dawn Woody. They have certainly chosen to make their ministry, or their misery, their ministry. They have a daughter in her early 20s. She has very unmanaged and extreme bipolar disorder. Tim and Dawn have chosen to be advocates for mental health reform. They have done interviews with local news sites, and they also formed a ministry called Stand By Me NC. And what they do is certain times of the year, they pass out bags and they ask people to fill them up with things that they deliver to people who are inpatients in mental health facilities, care packages for those last, least, and forgotten souls. There are a lot of things we do around here that offer hope to the world around us. We have a food pantry that's open every Thursday. That's offering hope. That's being hope. Just yesterday, I believe, the UMW went to visit the nursing home. That's an excellent example. That's being and offering hope. That's what Jesus wants us to do. I'll kind of pause for a moment and share some boring statistics with you. Well, they're not really boring, at least they're not to me. I'm currently enrolled in a class for 3 months to get a certification to be a professional administrator of the United Methodist Connectional Structure. There you go. The class is put on by the United Methodist Church General Council of Finance and Administration, and it is an online class. It's not the one I was complaining about on Facebook. It's an online class, and there are people all over the globe in this class. So I want you to understand the setting. This is a global class. This is the United Methodist Church, and they are giving statistics about the entire United Methodist Church. So, fact number one, the UMC has more than 12 million members worldwide. Fact number two, the UMC worships in 250 different languages weekly. Fact number three, the UMC needs leaders under 30. Fact number four disturbed me greatly. This is from the General Council on Finance Administration. The UMC is at risk of dying off in the United States due to its lack of growth among young people. I was in complete shock. And I kind of said that to say this. They offered us 9 things that we should be doing as a church to help make disciples of Jesus Christ for the transformation of our world and make a difference in the communities around us. They offered 10 things, I apologize. But number 6 is the one I want to draw your attention to today. It's what we just talked about. Be a source of hope and redemption. be a source of hope and redemption. Tim and Don Woody are being sources of hope and redemption. Ricky Temple's being a source of hope and redemption. I hope I'm being a source of hope and redemption. I know our food pantry's being a source of hope and redemption. I know those visitations to the nursing home are sources of hope and redemption. There are other things we can and should be doing, and I'm suggesting to you to look inside yourself, determine what your misery was, and remember how hard you struggled, and build a ministry around that, and take it to other people. There are four focuses of the United Methodist Church, the global United Methodist Church, and three of the four have everything to do with being hope. Number one is we're trying to focus on stamping out killer diseases by improving global health. Encouraging number two, engage in ministry with the poor. Number three, create new places for new people by starting new congregations and renewing older ones. The fourth one is develop leaders, and that's important. But those three really speak to what I'm trying to suggest to you. Be hope. Be hope in your home. Be hope in your community. Be hope in the world around you. God boldly assures us that what we are experiencing in this life, the good and the grief, is only temporary. The life that really matters is the everlasting one that we are going to share with Him in eternity. I think of cross-country runners when I hear that word perseverance. That they need fuel to go those long distances. They need calories and electrolytes and water and all that stuff. But friends, just like these runners, we need fuel too. And our fuel is hope in God. Hope in God empowers us to do something, even when you're not quite sure what that should be. Have you ever felt lost or confused or helpless? Well, I'm going to talk about algebra for a minute, because I took algebra twice in high school, and I can tell you I felt lost, confused, and hopeless both times. Algebra is complicated. This is a fair analogy because so is life. But I'm going to tell you a story about when I got to college and I had to take algebra, and I had to take two prep classes that didn't count, still had to pay for, before I could take college-level algebra. But I had this instructor, and she taught me something, and it has carried over. And I remember this so many times. Here's what she said. She said, if you come to class, show up when you're supposed to show up, pay attention, make notes, and do your homework. So I want you to equate that with, you come to church, you pray, you be a disciple, you be discipled, you study your scriptures. Okay, you see where I'm going with this. But her name is Trish Cabral. Trish Cabral said, you come to class, you show up, you pay attention, you make notes, you do your homework. And then when the test comes, here's what you do. When you look at that problem and you freeze and you feel lost, confused, and hopeless, and you don't know what to do, you do something. You do any part of it that you remember. You start working that little piece of it, even if it's just a simple addition or multiplication, you start working that little piece of it. Because if you've done what you're supposed to do, if you stayed in relationship with God like you're supposed to, if you've done what you're supposed to do, you'll start remembering the formulas I've taught you in class. You'll start physically, manually, mechanically remembering what you did on that paper when you were doing your homework. And some, if not all, of the answer will come to you. Friend, that carries over into a lot of life. Do something. Do anything you know. And we as Christians know the number one thing we're supposed to do is pray. Pray for each other. Pray for ourselves. When you're lost, hopeless, and confused, do what you know. Turn to God. Pray. In Philippians 4, 6, and 7, we're commanded to not be anxious about anything, but pray in every situation, and the peace of God that passes all understanding will be with you. Be hope. Hope in God reassures us when we realize that it's simply time to be still and wait. That's really hard for me. I don't know about you. When you've done all you can do and you just have to be still and wait on God, There's a song I really like by John Waller. It's from the movie Fireproof. I'm not going to sing it, but the lyrics go, "While I'm waiting, I will serve you. While I'm waiting." Serving God is a constructive and positive way to spend your time when you don't know what else you should and could be doing. I love that particular song, and it's possible it could have been inspired by Psalms 37:7. Be still before the Lord and wait patiently for him. Do not fret when people succeed in their wicked ways and carry out their wicked schemes. Be hope. Hope in God comforts us because we know that we are never alone in our journey. James 4:8 tells us, "Draw nigh unto God, and he will draw nigh unto you." And not only has he given us the sweet, sweet gift and presence of the Holy Spirit, he's given us each other, a family of believers, a church family. And we could and should be able to be willing to share with each other and to shore each other up in our times of suffering. So friends, I want you to go back and I remember, what's your story? What's your misery? And what's your ministry? Are you choosing hope over heartache? I want to leave you with this thought today. We all endure sufferings of one sort or another. You are not alone. You should never feel like you're alone. You are strong enough to persevere and arrive at hope. Choose hope and be hope. Our hymn of decision today, page number 348. And friends, while we're singing, Wanda's playing, if you want to come to the altar, give God your sufferings. If you need a prayer partner, just slip your hand up. Myself or Curtis will come pray with you. The altar is open, page 348.